Hello and welcome to the Tech on Toast podcast. My name's Chris Fletcher and I'm your host. Tech on Toast exists to connect hospitality to technology. Search for your best problem-solving tech on our marketplace, listen to both operators and tech experts on our podcast, or just meet up with the brilliant people who are helping innovate the hospitality industry as we enter a new era. Welcome to Tech on Toast. The Tech on Toast podcast is brought today by Point One. Point One offers the complete EPOS system for your hospitality business. From mobile order and pay and self-serve kiosks to restaurant and kitchen management, Point One has the solution. Head over to their website today to find out more and get in touch with their experienced team. Enjoy the show. Welcome to the Tech on Toast podcast. This week we are joined with Alex Morgan, Head of Sales and Partnerships at Point One EPOS. Alex, how are you?
Yeah, very well, thanks, Chris.
You might wonder why I sound a bit stressed. So we've had a morning, haven't we?
We have had a morning, indeed. You more so than I, but yeah, still.
Alex was here relaxing, having a beer when I got here at 10:30.
Yeah.
Not really, Steve.
Non-alcoholic.
And my train was late, and then we had some technical difficulties.
We did, indeed.
But we're all good.
We are good. We're here. We're happy. We're online. We're
and today is our first all Welsh podcast. Are you from Wales originally?
I am indeed, yes.
Oh, which bit are you from?
Born in Cardiff, just outside of Clean is where I live.
And do you speak Welsh?
Yes, a little bit. I mean, the one thing I can remember from school.
I was about to test you first. How can I?
I think the thing to was Gari Findia Tibach or Squalith and that.
Ah, Tibach.
Yeah, so basically it's asking the teacher, can I go to the toilet?
Yeah, that's there. Tibach is all I heard when I. Yeah. And you've got to get the. That's why the Scouse background helps me with that. So, Bore da. We're not going to do this in Welsh. It'd be horrific. Stop it. So, look, tell us a little bit about you and how how your career's been and how you're doing at Point One.
Oh, brilliant. Obviously, Alex Morgan, Head of Sales and Partnerships at Point One. I suppose my career goes back probably 20 years now, so I'm 33 now. I know.
Very brave giving away your age on the podcast.
I know.
I'm also 33.
Yeah.
Stone.
Yeah. Oh, you're right, mate. But, so my career sort of goes back 20 years, really. Going back to the age of 13... I come from quite a small village, two pubs in the village, and I don't know if this was legal back then, but basically I started work at the young age of 13.
Oh, mate, in Wales we had them down the pits at
exactly.
8, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, so I started work at my local pub at 13. Basically, my dad managed to sort of ask the owner, you know, can kick Alex a day a week, and I used to do 7 days a week, and it was just an hour a day, but sweeping out around to the pub, emptying ashtrays, obviously, which were commonplace back then in the pub.
Oh, yes.
Doing all the bottling up, so getting rid of all the other bottles, rotating the stock.
Did you just use a paintbrush?
No.
So this is total dark. But with ashtray, I used to clear rot ashtrays, obviously, with my age, back in the day in pubs. And we used to use a paintbrush to, to brush all the ash out.
Now you say that, I think we had maybe a makeup brush or something like that. But it's a similar sort of thing. So we'd empty.
We are genius as hospitality people.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, make do with what you've got.
Yeah. Anyway, continue. Sorry.
Yeah, it's all right. That was my sort of first entry to the world of work, really. And sort of from the age of 13, just do an hour a day. I stayed at that pub for quite a while, actually, and went through to the kitchen, you know, pot washing, did everything. And it was always a big thing. Not that, you know, we lived at the pub, mum and dad, sorry. We did go to the pub quite often as a family. But it was a big thing of the community. It was a real hub for you know, whether that's people, you know, sorting people out with fruit and veg from the allotment, that sort of thing, finding work or a painter to do stuff. And that really resonated with me. I'm quite a community person anyway, coming from, like you say, quite a small village in Wales, which sort of scares me sometimes in London.
Yeah, you're big down in London, getting lost in Brewdog.
Big smoke. Come here to find my fortune.
We just met global James Brown, didn't we?
We did indeed.
He's like a rock star.
JB, the big man, yeah. I sort of worked my way up, really, and where I sort of really cut my teeth and really enjoyed working in hospitality was behind the bar. I really prided myself on being a fantastic barman, really.
And are you pitching here?
Oh, well, you know, I was absolutely fantastic.
You're in the right place, man.
Yeah, and you know, even when you see sort of one of the customers stopping outside for a cigarette on the way down through the window, the pint would be
I like
on the
that.
Bar.
That's like the Boston
in.
Corner bar mentality. You know, but we do it in where are you from, Killeen?
Killeen. So it was, you know, and sort of within that, there was always an incentive to be a great barman, which was having a slate behind the bar of my half pints. That's what I'd usually have a half. And I absolutely loved working in the pub, and I worked at the Celtic Manor as well in the conference and banqueting. Worked in a Wetherspoons down in Bristol, which was a bit of an eye-opener from working from a rural pub.
I bet.
Yeah, yeah. 5 o'clock finishes.
There's not even music as well in those pubs.
This is the thing. It was actually a Lloyd's down on the waterfront, which brought in a different level of clientele. Yeah, that's how it was.
And you'll know what I'm talking about in a match day in Wales. If you ever run any kind of establishment on a match day in Wales, it's great fun until about 10 o'clock at night, and then hide your children. It just gets horrific. But I imagine Bristol is just like that all the time.
It was like that, and especially after, you know, Bristol City football games.
They're a joy. Yes.
You know, you just, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, the bar's still four deep, and you're just thinking, what am I doing here?
Not even a proper football club. What's wrong with them?
No. But, so it's sort of, I still worked in hospitality when I went over to Bristol, went to university there. I was still doing shift back in the pub in South Wales, and working on the weekends in Lloyd's as well. I've really always enjoyed being a people person. I like a drink as well, as a true Welshman. But and I sort of fell into a job in insurance, basically. And without going too long-winded, I was there for about 7 years. And there was a time about 6 years ago now, and I was off work with something called occipital neuralgia. I know it sounds quite bad. It was basically, without going into too much detail, you get a pinched nerve in the back of your neck.
Yeah.
And I had sort of nerve pain all shooting down one side of my head. And I was off. Yeah, it was honestly really, really, really debilitating and quite painful. And basically, I had a month off work, and I was on the sofa, and I was thinking, do I want to really go back to this office? And you look around, and there's guys in their sort of mid to late 50s and early 60s. And I thought, this doesn't enthuse me. This is not what I want to be doing with my life. And I thought, well, what am I passionate about, really? What do I want to do that either serves a greater purpose or something, you know, I can excel in? And sport was one option. Massive Cardiff City football fan and Welsh football fan. But there wasn't a real lot of jobs out there for that. No. And they can be quite precarious with, promotions and relegations, that sort of thing. And the other thing I was really passionate about, which was, hospitality, food and drink. So found a startup in Bristol called Wriggle. Shout out to Wriggles, no longer anymore.
Yeah, they were great.
Absolutely fantastic. Probably, I'll probably say this even now, it's the best company I've ever worked for.
I'm pretty sure Prime Minister were involved with Wriggle at the start.
They were, indeed. Absolutely fantastic company. The way I describe it, or used to pitch it, was a Groupon for hipsters or for independent venues, which there was a lot of hipsters in Brighton.
Yeah, Bristol and Brighton.
Yeah. But you were really giving something back and getting bums on seats in there. And then, unfortunately, the pandemic hit. And we tried to pivot the business and doing sort of, Wriggle perks for offices and things like that. And what was the other thing we did? Yeah, it was sort of a gift packages for Wriggle. So, you send one of your friends or maybe a corporate company would say, like, we need to look after employees. They're at home. They're not getting that contact with the office. So, those bags of Torres crisps, really some nice, pre-mixed Negroni, cycle pump gin, all of these things.
Yeah, bring it all.
And it was great to see us pivot. But unfortunately, that wasn't really going any longer. And obviously the company is no longer anymore. But then I went to work for a company called Uello, which you'll obviously know, based in South Wales.
I know Sina.
Sina Yamani. Yeah, very charismatic young CEO, very driven young man.
Very young CEO.
Yeah. And to be fair, quite charismatic, and he really sold the vision of the company that using open banking technology and really pivoting to order and pay, so QR code ordering. And that was a fantastic experience. So I joined those as senior commercial lead, and we had a team of sort of 6 or 7 salespeople. Phenomenal growth. We ended up white labeling our solution FreePOS now, which I believe is still in place to date, and we grew from 0 to 2,500 merchants. And fantastic, really great company. But then Flipdish came knocking, and this was after their 40 million raise. But
yeah, they were flying, weren't they?
They really were. It was just one of those opportunities. You think, I'm enjoying what I'm doing here, but if I don't take this now, and I've got a young girl, Elodie, she's 3.5.
Congrats.
Apple of my eye. Yeah. Joined Flipdish and they sold the dream. And it was that, again, a real roller coaster ride, real up and downs. And that
invested businesses, my friend.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, we'll hopefully talk about this a bit later. But, the VC-backed world and, the whole phrase of path to profitability.
Yeah.
We really grew exponentially and fun time. So I headed up a small team. About five or six guys, and we were selling QR code order and pay, with my background in that and self-service kiosks. And yeah, unfortunately, you know, obviously the way the world was going, yeah. we saw huge layoffs across really big tech platforms, and Flipdish was one of those, unfortunately. So I was, one of the unlucky or lucky few, depending on how you look at it.
I think lucky where you are now.
Extremely lucky. And funnily enough, I'd actually had a job alert on, I think back at my time in ULO 4.1. Point one, a base just down the road from me.
More Welsh boys.
Literally in the shadow of the Celtic Manor and the ICC. But job alert came up for a senior business development manager. Met with Steve and really got on well with Steve.
Yeah, so he's a nice guy.
Founder. Yeah, fantastic guy. And, you know, what him and Nick have achieved over the last 22 years is, you know...
I'd say he's one of the... I haven't met Nick, actually. I'm not sure if I have, but I think he's one of the good guys. You know, when you say the good guy, I'm not talking about tech, but just in business.
Yeah.
I meet a lot of people, and Steve always took time. Like, we kind of have this weird regular meet. Not that regular, actually. We need to do it again. Mm. But in the Celtic Manor, we go for a cup of tea and hang out kind of thing. We just chat about... Normally, we talk about pizza. But we just chat. But he's just a good guy, and he's been around for so long. That's one of the things I want to talk about today with point one, actually, that legacy of being around doesn't mean your tech is old.
No.
It means you have really great experience. And yeah, tell us a little bit about that, because obviously point one, you've got all of these shiny competitors that are against you that come over from the States or Australia, wherever they're coming from, you know who I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of different competitors coming in. You guys, based out of Wales, but working nationally. How's it going? And how has point one stood up against these big giants?
So it's going pretty well. We've got a few niches that we're exploring, but I think sort of the story really of, and I don't think Steve and Nick really shout about this enough, but they basically formed the company 22 years ago. They both went to Cardiff Uni together. Steve, on one hand, did a degree in hospitality management, and Nick was a computer scientist, I believe. I'll probably get told off if I've got that wrong. But anyway, really...
I think that's right. He told me that,
Bit of a tech whiz. And they sort of, I think they had a year or two in the world of work, and then they went, actually, you know, it's got to be a better way than, you know, these old Casio style, you know, open all hours tills, you know. And they formed them. They said, do you know what, let's give this a crack and get a you know, an EPOS company set up. And funnily enough, one of the other pubs I worked in, it was the first actually touchscreen EPOS system I'd ever used. Where we're at now, you know, I think we're at about 2,000 merchants, spread across all of the UK, and it's quite a broad church. I mean, we'll come on to talk about the theatre stuff, which we've got quite a few theatres.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah, but museums, bars, you know, we've got Simmons Bars in London. I think they're at 27 sites
now.
That's
right, yeah.
Some really cool delis on board as well, and some places like Ottolenghi, but right up to fine dining.
I think I've used Point One. I'm sure Pi had Point One at one point.
Yeah.
I think in the West and in especially in Wales and Bristol, you guys are quite well known, right?
Yeah. We've got a good local following. I think people always want that local touch to be there. But at the same point, we've got businesses up in Aberdeen, you know, Penzance, you know, really, really broad. Which in turn is a lot of travel for me, which is quite cool, actually. I get to see some different parts of the country. You know, you've got a lot of these shiny alternatives coming over now. But I think really where we tend to do well is a graduation product, you know, and this is not to the discredit any competitors, but, you know, if I was setting up a new company tomorrow, brand new, I would probably go for a tablet-based or really out-of-the-box solution that, you know, might be really, really cheap. And within that, there's a bit of false economy. But we see that people get to maybe two or three locations and they go, okay, this was great for now, but we've graduated away from that.
I think that journey's really quick now from what I'm... Because I think the young kids of today are building businesses. Like, so I work a lot with street food businesses, type in Cardiff in Wales. Mm. A friend of mine runs a business called iFeed, which is, I've mentioned before, which is, he's got about 12 different brands.
Mark?
You know Mark, do you? He's my little gangster chef from back in the day. Yeah. Very clever guy. But he's working with Toucan Productions now up in Wales, and they are huge. And I know Matt, who owns Toucan. And it's really interesting. But he very quickly realised that tech could save his life. Because he was doing, like, delivery actor in there, doing bits and bobs with him. And I think Posy's not on that journey, actually. I think he's still banging around with Zettel. But we had a conversation the other day, actually. We should talk to you. We had a conversation. But do you find that actually people who are local want to work with local? Because it's quite, if you don't live in Wales, you won't understand what I'm talking about here. But in Wales, we're quite funny. We kind of like to work with people we know.
I think there's something about keeping that money in the local economy and buying from people locally. We definitely see that with some of the more established business in Wales, that they prefer to have, you know, someone just down the road. And I think there are other sort of companies that have got reseller networks that really benefit from that. And I think it's that fail-safe of, you know, if something goes drastically wrong with my kit, someone can come out with a replacement the same
even
day.
If they're, you know, they could do that in London, but I suppose just because you feel like they're down the road, it's a different feeling of security,
and,
I suppose.
Yeah, and ultimately we've got a lot of London clients, and we've got, you know, engineers based in London, so if someone does need to call out, you know, we can do that pretty quickly. And you know, with the advent of tech now, you know, dialing in remotely to identify problems is...
Even my designer can dial into my Mac now and kind of fix things for me. I love it. He sits there going, this is embarrassing. I'm like, yeah, I know, can you just fix it? So it's bad. And tell us about the theatres, because when I met Steve, pre-pandemic, I would say, you guys had got one or two, I think, I can't remember, but it was a real upturn, wasn't there?
Yeah, I think maybe... I think sort of Steve, when I joined the company, he said about 7 years ago, we noticed, yeah, we had a couple, a handful of theatres. And really... The system actually works quite well within that environment because of the speed of service. And I'd say this along with late night bars like Simmons, but in the theatre setting, you've got 30 minutes of an interval to squeeze every drop of revenue out of that. So system's got to be intuitive, and it's got to be less button clicks to, you know, process that order. So we noticed the system was always developed to be like that. And started sitting down with our clients. And this is, I think, where we add a lot of value is not just necessarily in the software and what it does, but in the softer things like the support services, but also the project services, so the onboarding and all of that. And we started sitting down with these customers and said, look, what else, what feature can we build that's really going to add value to your organization? And this is what we tried to do throughout point one, is really be quite consultative and go, you know, are you having problems in the kitchen with staffing and chef and keeping hold of those? And, you know, is there ways we can make the chef's jobs easier? And one of the biggest things for agency workers in particular in the theatre space was interval ordering. Interval ordering is basically click and collect, you know, to put it that way. And we built a really great feature within that that you can take interval orders very quickly from staff, but you can also route them to different parts of the venues. And there's a facility within that where once everything has gone into the performance, you print interval orders for your bar or location, and it'll give you a headline docket of, you know, how many pints of lager we need to do, how many, you know, gin and tonics, that sort of thing. Also all the individual tickets.
So you can prep.
Yeah, exactly. But there's some really smart rules around that depending on your ticket number and some integrations we have within that, which I'll come on to in a second. But about smart routing of orders. So you can say, you know, we've got 40 orders that'll be at collection point A, and when it goes on to 41st order, that'll go to another area of the venue. So, and really, we've just absolutely hammered that, and we live and breathe theatres. You know, there's about 82 theatre customers we've got to date.
Wow.
And there's things that we do around...
I don't even know whether that many theatres.
Yeah, no, oh God, there's about 700. I didn't.
You've got some work to do, my friend.
I know,
get back on the road.
Steve cracking the whip. But yeah, we've got a really good penetration within that space, and that's in part to the software and the ease of use and whatnot, but also some of the integration partners we have. So partners like Spectrix, Tessitura, TicketSolve, Visit OneLink.
Tech on Toast is pleased to announce that HRC Hotel, Restaurant and Catering is returning to London on the 25th to the 27th of March 2024 at the XL. Discover game-changing trends, network with industry leaders and explore cutting-edge solutions that will elevate your business. Mark your calendars for an unforgettable experience at HRC, as this is where the future of hospitality unfolds. Don't miss out. To find out more, check out the website www.hrc.co.uk. Back to the chatting.
Passionate. And yeah, we've really just cemented that now. You know, we've got some really huge theatre customers, and that then trips over into the other world that, you know, I don't know many hospitality venues for one site that have got sort of 49, 50 tills.
Yeah.
But our project services team have done installs with, you know, Blackpool Winter Gardens has got seven
bars within that.
Huge projects. But that really sets us up for success when we're dealing with complicated site rollouts. So, you know, the intuitive nature and the fact that it's so quick and speedy to use... You know, you need that in a QSR. You need that in Simmons bars.
Yeah.
You know, you need that in the.
I think it's really interesting. We're doing free audits for operators at the moment. So we go in, we talk to operators, and we audit their stack for them, and then we go back to the marketplace and talk to you guys and whoever's around to kind of match what their nuance might be. And one of the biggest messages we're getting back from the market is that actually that consultative approach is really. Because mid-market brands don't have a CTO. I mean, I bore everyone with this every week, probably. But they don't have that functionality. I was talking to a pub chain that you will know yesterday, and the area manager, I think he's probably ops director, maybe one beneath ops, senior operations manager, is running all of their tech. And, you know, I love the fact that he has gone and bloody taught himself how to run on this tech, but that is madness.
Yeah.
How's that? That guy's got a bunch of KPIs that he's meant to deliver on, and then he's doing that. So I think there's a real need for a consultative approach to what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose that's something I've always had as a salesperson, but something, you know, that's really, we aligned nicely with Steve and said, look, it's not here to sell them absolutely every product that we have under the sun. That's not what we're about, really. And sometimes that can create problems between product and sales, that we've done integrations in the past that haven't been the one that's, you know, widely used by the industry. Yeah. But the client goes, look, this is integral to my business.
Yeah.
And we can go, look, there's other alternatives for you that we integrate with. But at the same point, that's going to cost the client a lot of money to pay for that, you know, maybe that graduation product for, you know, inventory or something else, you know, labor management. And we sometimes have just said, actually, we'll do that integration for you to really help support you.
Yeah, I think it's really common. I think that point you made there about that one nuance or that one thing that they could buy most things off the shelf, right? But that one thing they need, which is probably why they ended up coming to you,
exactly,
is saying, I've got this problem, I need to fix it. The rest of it is fine. Yeah. I just need to fix it. And then you have to bend, right? Or you have to find a way to...
You do, and I know with some bigger organisations, they'll go, well, actually, this is the market-leading product for this particular suite, and, you know, we're only going to work with this product, and we'll force customers down that route.
Yeah.
I mean, you're kind of seeing that with the advent of payments already. You know, there's a big argument, like you say, and I know something you're talking about, of all-in-one solutions or best of breed.
Yeah.
And sort of something Steve has already...
Where do you sit on that? From a personal point of view?
Stick to the knitting, really.
Yeah.
Do what you're good at, and... You know, the argument to say you don't want a Frankenstein tech stack, but our approach to integrations, and especially QA, is really rigorous. We won't let anything go out. You have customers sometimes chomping at the bit. Where is it? When's it done?
Yeah.
But we won't release it out in the field until we're ready. Whereas, you know, some people will have, you know, integrations with 150 different partners.
Yeah.
But if the integrations keep falling down...
What's the point? They're not integrations.
Exactly. What is the point? And that's where I think...
Well, someone said to me, there's APIs and then there's APIs, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I think I might know the person who said
that. Yeah. And one thing Steve said to me ages ago, it was just after the pandemic, the first trade show back, he was on a panel with me. And he said, sometimes I just say no. So a lot, you know, sometimes I'll go into pitch for a project and we'll get halfway down the line and I'll be just like, we can't do this.
This is it.
Or we won't do this.
No. And I think you've got to be really transparent. You know, I don't want to be looking at my phone thinking, oh God, that person's calling me again about that feature or that integration that I've promised. And that comes with the territory with sales. You know, you've got some salespeople who promise the world. You know,
no, really?
Yeah.
They exist.
No,
surely not you, Alex.
No. But it's cyclical, because people will come back to business, and there's a lot of businesses we've worked with over the time at point one, and that's fine if they want to go try another solution. That's not a problem at all, but you treat your customers well, because they'll come back to you eventually.
Sales is really interesting. We have it in Atollo. We have a couple of salespeople at really high level. Mm-hmm. They're great, Lenny and James, and they obviously are chasing down there. I've never worked with it before, really. I've never worked with that kind of high-level targeting where they're making more money than the owners, basically, right?
Yeah.
But they are also the lifeblood of the company. And I find it really interesting that sometimes what they want to achieve is well apart from what the product can achieve.
Yeah.
And I think that's the same in tech, right? That the passion to sell the product just to get a sale can get in the way of,
definitely,
you know, achieving what you're overall, especially for the customer, right? You have to go back and unpick it afterwards.
Yeah. And I think this is something Steve, you know, not to blow my own trumpet, but he always says, look, you have a really entrepreneurial focus to the way you do things, and you try and think of things as a business owner, and, you know, whether that's working with products on scoring different development features and whatnot, but just improving process and rollout and stuff like that. But the all-in-one guys are doing a fantastic job. You know, they've come over here from wherever they are in the world, and they seem to be making a lot of waves. But what we're seeing, and I think this is where point one tends to add a lot of value. I think I've already mentioned in terms of the way we go through and set things up and handhold people through their graduation or their 30 till rollout or whatever it might be. But also in our support team, and this isn't to say sort of, they're always phoning our support team with problems, because the system's robust, it's reliable, it's efficient, but they tend to build up a working relationship with some of the guys in our team. Just to name, you know, a couple, Brandon and Simon, for example, we get really glowing feedback from people about that. And that's because customers don't want to necessarily deal with someone who's in LA or Vancouver or New York or Bangladesh, wherever it may be. They want to be able to deal.
Techies like to drop a country, don't we?
Yeah.
It's like power by geography.
Yeah, it's pretty much.
Yeah, but it's true. And I think sometimes that's romantic to the operator, right? They're like, oh yeah, I can work with these guys are based out of New York or wherever it might be. But I think it comes down to relationship. Business always, exactly, from my experience anyway, comes down to relationships with people.
Yeah.
And and obviously your product needs to be good, right? It needs to do what it says in the tin. But things go wrong always.
This is it. This is what I wanted to come to. Tech will go wrong. Everyone's got fantastic tech in the industry. We're blessed to be in an age of, you know, some great products out there. But things do go wrong. And when, you know, the shit hits the fan, you want to be able to call someone, get hold of them who knows your business, that you can go, right, this is the problem, and they know straight away.
And speak your language, right?
This is it. And I think this is nothing against call centre staff. I've worked in a call centre, but these are really technical support guys that we've got within the business. And those guys, along with our trainer and our operations team, I think is really what adds value to point one. Our biggest asset is our people, and the average tenure of staff, I think, is 7 years, which is really encouraging. That's what
I think that support actually is becoming the USP for the success. I genuinely believe it's flipped because tech's moved on so much. Yeah. It's very hard. You know, you can put a cigarette paper between some of the suppliers now, right? Because they've got great product, all of them, and they're built, you know, different branding, different stories, but pretty much great product everywhere. But the difference is now is what are the customers getting in terms of support? And I always say that, you know, to get you into a company, a CEO will buy you, or CFO, mm-hmm. or someone will buy you, but to kick you out, a waiter will do it.
Yeah.
And so you've got to have product that sits in there. And then when there's a problem, you've got to be able to fix it quickly, like really quick.
That's it. Yeah.
Before you become the new word on the street, on the Facebook group going, oh yeah, this POS is crap and it doesn't work, you know.
On the industry WhatsApp groups.
Yeah.
I'm trying my best to get in.
There's a lovely WhatsApp, there's a marketing WhatsApp group. Vic Sale has one. And yeah, I've seen people get bombed in there, yes. like tech suppliers. Yeah. And nothing wrong with that if you can come back in that group and go, oh, they fixed it in 24 hours.
That's it, you know. Yeah, I think support is the big thing. And we do tend to see customers who've been burned by support previously come. They're going, oh, this is such a refreshing experience. And, you know, I think that's where we add a lot of value. And even within that, as part of your account management or sales process and just, you know, customer service, is speaking not just to the person who's bought your solution, the ops or the FD, you know, going, right, we'll do this integration into your finance platform. It saves you loads of time. Going to the waiting staff and going, you know, what is it that you guys are struggling with at the moment? And the kitchen staff, I mean, to use an example, and I think these guys are being used here, is a labelling solution that we work with at the moment called Dill.
Yes. And
the guys at BrewDog Waterloo use it, and it's saving that basically it can either be used for PPDS, so prepackaged labelling,
yeah.
for allergen compliance, but also for stock rotation. So gone are the days now where you're manually writing out.
Oh God, I wasted about a year of my life writing those labels.
I know, and it really adds value.
Are you talking about replacing the day dots?
Yeah.
Oh my God, yeah. I love you. I would have loved you, but yeah.
Yeah, it's saving chefs, you know, upwards of an hour a shift, you know. And if you can do that, that helps for retention, that chefs have got an hour left in their day. You know, that helps a business.
And
know?
Also fraud, right? Without being rude, when I was doing those day labelling, it got to the point of the day where you're like, I'm just shoving a blue one on there.
Yeah, just I just need to get out of it.
Literally. Yeah, that sounds really bad. No. Don't worry. I worked for colleges if you ever, about mid-2000s, if anyone's worried. If you're still here, you were fine.
If you're still alive, living and breathing.
But no, but I think it's a common thing, right? We're hostile to people. We will cut corners if things don't work properly. And it's really, you know, bad because it makes our lives really hard. But yeah, anyway, look, I'm digressing. I mean, you guys, your product is fantastic. I know a bit about it because obviously Steve's taught me through it a few times. But how do you kind of, what, because... plugging into different solutions is great, but what kind of data analytics are you getting back out of the product? How are you supporting, I suppose, restaurant operators through that?
Yeah, so a good question.
And theatres, sorry.
And theatres, yeah. I mean, obviously with theatres, it's a strange quite a business, really, because you've got a bar, a cafe, sometimes a restaurant in these environments. It's very similar to what we're dealing with our other, 1600, 1700 hospitality clients, but... The biggest thing we tend to see for those multi-site operations. So we've got a analytics platform through our web portal, our back office, our head office product. And what we do is we combine labor management tools. So we've got our own staff scheduling. However, you know, it's maybe not as good as some of the top guys in the market, the labor management tools. We plug labor and cost data from stock labor and plug all of that into, you know, revenue as well. I think we've got about 60 different reports on our head office.
It's interesting, isn't it? And do you find you're getting asked for... Do you build reports by being asked, or do you build reports because someone in the office go, well, you've got hostile experience, you're like, oh, you definitely need this report.
That's it. So we've got... I think there's usually 99% of the time, we've got a report for everyone.
Right.
But there is everyone's operation is different. Everyone's financial controller or, you know, ops
Trust
director.
Me. Prime Minister, we had a report for a report. We had Labour was because it was very small teams, right, in very small sites, and to measure that labour is really difficult because one person. So how productive can one person be? But there was a way of doing it. Mm. But we built that through Excel. So when we went to tech to try and fix that, that was difficult.
Yeah, but you know we're lucky that we've got Steve's hospitality background and Nick and Rob, our head of product, and Nick builds custom reports all the time for customers. Okay, sometimes if it's very niche. You know, there's a development cost within that. But really sort of sitting down with people and going through, you know, what's your financial platform, you know, what is it at the moment? I think in the advent of supply costs going through the roof and being turbulent, labour costs, it's really allowing people that granular detail and that control over,
energy. I mean, even energy costs.
Yeah, and I think you've got to be really fleet-footed and go, actually, we're overstaffed for today and, you know, actually our cost of supply of goods have gone up. We now need to either increase, you know, our margin, our pricing, but to be able to have that data at your fingertips. And there's some really interesting third-party products with, you know, AI and forecasting that we're looking to work with that I think add an extra layer. Data is obviously huge at the moment.
And if you're, because you're sales and partnerships.
I am indeed.
And you've alluded to it a couple of times to different potential partners you could work with. Mm. How's that? Because I find that when I first came into DeliverAct, I found that really interesting, actually. I thought the partner network was probably more useful for more beneficial to make sales than actually sales itself, because you're getting warmer leads, you're working with people who already trust other people.
100%.
And that it's almost like a pyramid thing where you're like, I trust this guy, I've already worked with him, he's his friend, so he must be cool as well.
That's it. And we tend to see, I think, within that mid-market up to maybe the lower end of enterprise space, people buy from their peer network.
Yeah.
They say, hey, Chris, who are you guys using?
Yeah.
You know, we've got a great solution here. Oh, yeah, I'd recommend you.
So common.
It really is. There's a big change in, you know, buyer behavior. Sales cycles get longer. There's a lot more people you need to speak to within that organization, you know, from marketing, finance, you know, understand how it affects their job and how we can roll out these solutions.
And that's where that all-in-one conversation comes in, especially, right? Because marketing might love their one...
That's it.
Let me think of something marketing use. Stampede, right? I'm just going to pick Stampede. Sorry, everybody else. God. But they like Stampede. They want to work with Stampede. And then they want you guys. And then they want Rotor Ready for their labour, whatever. Mm-hmm. So it becomes interesting, doesn't it? Because I think different departments obsess with different things. Mm. So selling them the all-in-one product becomes interesting.
It does. And I think sometimes it's just making sure that that all-in-one solution basically keeps updating that product. Sometimes they can go, right, there'd be nothing stopping us tomorrow from starting up a table reservation system. But really, are we going to keep investing within that, you know, whilst, you know, we need to make improvements to it?
Yeah, stay in your lane.
There is a bit of that. And obviously, there's a lot of acquisition happening in this space at the moment. You know, we know that's...
No, I get it. I get that you want to be attractive and you want it... Not you, point one, but I get why the other guys want to bring on other elements to their products 100%. Because they want to make more money, right?
That's it.
And they want to grow their business. So, and that to grow and to acquire more customers, they probably need different products that the customers don't have. So I get that. But I'm kind of in the best in class category.
Yeah.
Whereas if I think about my personal choices and way I buy, I will buy Nike for certain things. Yeah. I'll buy Apple for certain things. I would never go to them, like I'm not going to wear Apple clothing if that occurs.
No. Yeah.
Don't do that, Apple, please.
Or Apple banking or whatever you're into now. Yeah.
Oh, Apple banking, I don't know, maybe.
But,
I'm a sucker for Apple, I tell you. Everything in my house. I think that focus, you find out in your own career, if you focus on one thing, you get really good at it.
That's it, yeah. And I think sometimes we always, if there is an issue with a third-party integration or platform, as a POS provider, it's the engine of the business.
Yeah.
You know, it is
the heartbeat.
The source of truth, you know, whatever you want to call it. We tend to then go, okay, well, we need to go and fix that. We don't just sort of scapegoat our client and go, well, yeah, you need to go to them.
And how is that? So in terms of integrations, you've got like a CSV up. So you've got an integration that requires you to do something afterwards. So I'm an operator. I have an integration. I'm doing my fingers in the air.
Yeah.
But it means that there's a CSV upload somewhere or there's a download or I've got to go and put something in a spreadsheet or upload something. And then there's all the other way in the end when you get an open API where it's fantastic and everything dances for you and all your numbers just appear in front of your face. How do you think that is generally across, I know it's a bit of a big question, across the industry? Do we have a real vast array of integrations or are we getting better?
We do have quite a vast array. I think there's a lot with the advent of open APIs. There's not many companies who have a closed API system, but what we do within the sales process is somebody say, oh, you integrate with XYZ, great. But we really delve into, well, what does that integration mean to you? Because it's easy as a salesperson. We integrate with them.
Yeah, it's on the list. It says so on here, the matrix.
God, yeah. Different integration requests literally every day at the moment.
Yeah.
But I think delving into, okay, well, why do you need that to integrate and what does that need to do for you?
Yeah.
Rather than just saying we integrate, you install the solution and go, well, this isn't what we needed to do. That may be okay for those other 200 businesses, but this is not specific.
And that's where it impacts product choice, right? Because you might end up going, okay, well, if you don't do that, then there's no point using my favourite one.
No.
So maybe I have to go down another route.
Yeah.
So I just think it's interesting. I think there's it's the one thing, again, that I get asked a lot. I'm building a matrix, which is horrific, as you just pointed out, because every day it changes, literally every day. And Sam is helping me build it, and we're building this matrix so customers can see who integrates into who and... Yeah, it's mind-blowing, and it's never-ending.
Yeah.
It's like a black hole.
Oh, my God, that's it. There's new companies popping up all the time, and there's obviously some that you've integrated with in the past, you've gone under, and, you know... But I think really within that process is and the consultative approach is really trying to identify with, so, well, why do you need that? And you know, is there another way we can circumvent this? Or, you know, actually, my version of the integration is very different from what yours is and what you need it to do. And therefore, actually, we're not a good fit. And you know, we just walk away at that point and say, look, you know, we can potentially develop it. But within that, there's, you know, RISE scoring. So what's the reach of this? You know, does it impact 99% of our clients? What's the impact? Does that allow us to retain, you know, a lot of clients? Does it allow us to win business? You know, how confident are we of that? And then how much effort do we need to put in from a development perspective to do
that?
That.
So, RISE. Yeah. Writing that one down.
It's fantastic, honestly.
Who taught you that one?
I think it was back at Uelo, actually.
Sina Yamani, take a bow.
Yeah. Oh, no, I don't know if I can give Sina credit for that, Chris. But yeah, it was one of those things. And I think it really helps, you know, when you're aligning a business and looking at strategy going forward or looking at what integration to do, it really helps the business. So I've tried to do a lot of that, you know, in my sort of, I think, 10 months now at point one.
10 months.
10, 11 months, yeah, something
cracking
like
on.
Yeah.
But you're in lovely Wales still, which is the best thing. Yeah. And I suppose looking down the road a bit, at the future of Point One and the future of Alex, mm-hmm. How does that look?
So really, I'm like I say, quite a rounded skill set. I'd like to eventually. Steve and Nick are still only young men, really. I don't think they're in their 50s yet. So
yeah, he wants to start a pizza business. He told me,
yeah,
I'm sure.
Yeah, I know. He's got a few.
I think he's already started. Doesn't he do it up his back garden? He's telling me he's done something.
Yeah,
or, I don't know.
He's got a few cool ideas on bubbling away, Steve, in terms of actually hospitality brands. But maybe he'll go into that and say, look, Alex, you be the MD of the company.
He'd be mad. I'd stay in tech, mate. It's hard work.
It's easy to say from there. So, yeah, I could give that a crack. All right,
that's how most people start a chain, mate. And then it happens. Then you go, oh dear.
Yeah. But in terms of us, I think it's steady growth. Like I've alluded to already, I've been in companies where the growth is, you know, the rocket emoji.
Yeah, it's that,
you know,
or that.
It's that. And within there, what we see with some of those companies who grow very quickly is what falls by the wayside is onboarding, setup.
It's the infrastructure, right?
And the infrastructure and the support.
It just isn't possible.
No, and I think that's why measured growth for us as a company, you know, it'd be great if we said, look, well, we want to double what we're doing within 2 years. Really, without the infrastructure, it you're going to start losing customers, your reputation starts going. So I think progressive growth within theatre, but also within the casual dining sector. You know, we've got some fine dining venues. We've got, you know, a couple of new ones that, yeah, we'll be able to announce very soon. Some good
things. Are there fine dining? Not in Wales, are there fine dining?
Oh, Ernest here would be the one I'd like to get on board. Gareth,
Pasture? There's another one as well.
Nico West Six has just come to Cardiff now. And,
check us out in Cardiff. Bally Ballerson as well.
Yeah. God, there's some, do you know what? There's how many mini golf places in Cardiff at the moment?
Yeah, it's Gareth Bale's fault.
Socialising venues. And the one place I'd really recommend is Asador 44.
Asador? Is that Portuguese?
It's like Echebarri.
By the stadium.
By the stadium.
I know it. Being that's beautiful. Yeah. Anyone who comes to Cardiff, just ring Alex. He'll give you a tour.
Yeah, we've got, and the pizza scene in Cardiff is phenomenal. A lot of Italian immigration. Anyway, I'm going off on a
No, it's true. It makes me laugh because I lived all over the world, right? When I was younger, I lived everywhere, and then I came back to the UK with Hard Rock, and I ran the Cardiff Hard Rock Cafe. God, when Wembley was shut, so it was cool. So all the events were at the stadium, right? So Madonna, REM, all that stuff. And then I met my missus, and then the rest is history, right? So I've stayed there. And it's the only city I don't think I'll ever leave.
No.
It's something about being by the water. There's something about the accessibility to sport and to music and to events in Cardiff, which is, I don't know any other city in the UK that can do that, including London.
No, that's
And it is, and the people are just really cool.
Yeah. We just need to get the transport in.
I just don't know what they're saying half the time.
No, that's the problem.
No, it's really interesting. And look, and you're on the marketplace, you guys. You've been sponsoring the podcast for 2 seasons, which we, everyone says thanks. There you go. You heard an invisible thanks. I'll have to cut that bit. And where do we get hold of you? So how do we get hold of you, Alex? If someone's listening in, they want to speak to you.
Yeah, LinkedIn usually could be the easiest way to get through.
Can they stalk you on there?
They can stalk me on there. They can WhatsApp me. my number is 07522-457-445.
Okay.
Or Alex.
I think you're going to get mostly pizza bookings out of that, aren't you?
Or alex.morgan@pointone.co.uk. But yeah, you know, we've got a broad church. It's a very flexible solution.
And great people, right? Point One are great people. For anyone listening, I mean, I know you guys quite well, and I think if you're looking for people to work with who are like you, then I'd recommend talking to these guys.
It's a people business. Yeah. It still will be, you know. You can buy stuff offline, you can buy stuff in the post, that's great, but you know, if you really want to speak to somebody who wants to understand and know your business, I think that's where we add a lot of value. You know, it's the operation, and you know, ultimately, I love my job. I get to come speak to cool people like you, you know, go to cool places.
Thank you, my friend. That's very nice of you.
Eat and drink a lot of nice food. So, yeah, it's good. Life's good at the moment.
Well, that's great. Look, well, we're stuck in BrewDog, unfortunately, for a few hours now. God knows what we're going to do. Anyway, look, great to see you, mate. And we look forward to seeing you soon. Guys, check out Point One. They are fab.
Thanks very much, Chris.
Cheers.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.